Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
That's it. Right there in a nutshell, we're here. It's Monday night. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave, Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're going to continue here in a bit after we touch on some news with our ongoing series about Article 5 of the United States Constitution, about how we need to grab this government by the horns and wrestle it to the ground. We need to get this thing rolling. We want to hear from you. We want to talk to you. We want to know how you think we should do it. I don't have the answers. I haven't talked to anyone who does have the answers about where we go from here. Mark Levin, who's gotten on this bandwagon a little late, but thank goodness he has, is really, really getting the ball rolling some on this. His book is selling like hotcakes, The Liberty Amendments. I recommend that book to everyone. I read it yesterday and today. Levin had quite a showing at his book signings up in the Northeast, so we hope that people are getting on that. We're certainly happy that someone that can get this idea out there and who has the name brand recognition to get it really rolling is finally jumping on the bandwagon here. Thank you and hat tip to Mark Levin. We've been on this bandwagon for a couple of years now, looking for this. We've been fighting the good fight, taking on the conservatives who are mamby-pamby scared of it, and taking on the progressives who are overly scared of it because they know what's going to happen if we have a amendment convention. What it takes, according to Article 5 of the United States Constitution, is two-thirds of the states have to, the state legislatures have to tell Washington that they want one. Once two-thirds of the states have told Washington that they want one, there will be one. It's not that two-thirds of the states apply for one and then the Congress says yes or no. It's when two-thirds of the states call for one, there is one. And when I say one, of course, we're talking about an amendment convention, a convention of the 50 states to propose amendments to the United States Constitution. Of course, the proposed amendments have to be approved by the convention. Styled, there'll be style committees. They'll be presented in written format. Then, proposed amendments passed by the convention will be presented to the states. And after that, you still have to have 3/4 of the states to ratify any such amendment. But it's time. It's time. The government has become onerous, egregious, and downright despotic. We'll move into that. Okay, so September 11th, in the state of Missouri, right here where I'm coming to you live from, they are going to have a thing they have every year called a veto session. What happens is we have a part-time legislature in the state of Missouri. They meet from the first of the year through the spring, March, May sometime, I believe. And then the governor signs and or vetoes by not signing one way or the other all the legislation that was passed through both houses the way Schoolhouse Rock said it should be done. So it's passed the House, it's passed the Senate, it goes to the governor. Some of those get vetoed by the governor, and this year it was a record number of vetoes by our dictatorial governor, Jay Nixon. Jay Nixon, taking his prompts from the Obama administration, has decided that he makes the laws and not the legislature. And so those vetoed bills then go back for an override. There is, in September of every year, the legislature is called back to Jefferson City, and they spend a couple of days deciding whether or not to override the governor's vetoes. I personally believe that every bill the governor vetoes should be voted on for override. I believe that if it's going to fail, it's going to fail. If it's going to pass, it's going to pass. But I believe that there ought to be an up or down vote in both houses on every bill the governor vetoes. It looks as though one of the biggies, the governor's veto of the first income tax decrease in Missouri history in about 100 years, is not even going to be brought up for a vote. The overwhelmingly Republican majority does not believe that they have veto-proof. Republican majority does not believe that they have the support to override the governor's veto of the first income tax cut in almost 100 years. Isn't that funny? Isn't that sadly funny? Now, on the other hand, then there's this Second Amendment Preservation Act that looks like it will certainly be overridden by the same quote-unquote conservative supermajority, in spite of the fact that if they slept through the passage of this thing, every one of them now understands that there is clearly unconstitutional language in this bill, that there is clearly a violation of constitutional rights, both state constitution and federal constitution, in this bill. The bill says that it is a crime for any newspaper to publish the name of any concealed carry permit holder. And yet that one will be overridden by a majority who call themselves conservative in favor of the bill that rides conservative principles of less tax all the way to the governor's desk. What's wrong with that picture? I'm telling you, the whole ball of yarn in Jefferson City is just becoming so tangled up and confiscated. I was having a discussion with some friends today, two great friends, who were going at it over the lack of action, and there has been a total lack of action in the last 3 months on the DOR scandal. My God, someone needs to go to jail over this thing. Where is everyone? Where is this supermajority at? We hear nothing anymore about investigations. We hear nothing about charges being brought. I mean, someone broke the law. Meanwhile, in Egypt, Christians are being slaughtered because they're Christians. Churches are being burned to the ground. The Muslim Brotherhood is marauding through the streets, dragging the bodies of priests and marching nuns down the street to ridicule. I don't care, quite frankly, whether the powers in Washington, D.C. come down on the side of the military interim government. But sadly, they are coming down on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama has suspended promised military aid to the government of Egypt. His Obama's spokesperson, John McCain, is suggesting that the overthrow of the Muslim Brotherhood was somehow bad, as the people that he stands up for disembowel, behead Christians just because they're Christians in Egypt. In the Sinai Peninsula, mass executions of Christians are taking place. And if you don't want to take sides, Mr. President, don't take sides. But if you do take sides, by God, take the right side. I mean, you tossed out the only friend that the United States has had in that region, in the Arab world, in a century, replaced him with your Muslim Brotherhood. Finally, the people of Egypt, in short time, got tired of the oppression of the Muslim Brotherhood, of the power grab by Morsi, threw him out, trying to establish a democratic rule, and you're on the wrong side again. My gosh, what in the world is going on up there in Washington? And what can we do about it? We'll get to that when we come back.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Raise the federal tax on cigarettes by 94 cents per pack.
If you make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime.
Because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
So our government has gotten out of control, and we sit here daily and just complain and moan and talk about what are we going to do. The world is coming to an end, and acting as though we, the people who are the holders of the reins of government, are impotent to do anything about it. I mean, these people just keep coming up for election, and they keep throwing money at and trashing challengers and sicking the IRS on challengers. The president of the United States makes laws. The president of the United States single-handedly enacts the DREAM Act. The president of the United States stays deportation of certain individuals. The EPA makes laws. The IRS makes up laws and then enforces them depending on what your politics are. The Supreme Court has decided that Arizona cannot protect itself from an illegal immigrant influx. The Supreme Court has decided that as long as you disguise forcing people to buy something as a tax, that that's okay. The Department of Education takes over your school. Do you know that in spite of the fact that across this state, and I'm sure across many, many states, tens of millions of people are up in arms about Common Core? If you don't know what that is, then study it. Do you realize that across the state of Missouri, at least, in every sixth grade classroom today, every teacher was teaching exactly the same lesson? Thank you, United States Department of Education. So what can we do about that? What can we do about it? Well, Article 5 of the United States Constitution was put in place by the founders specifically because they, most of them, thought it possible, and the smart ones thought it inevitable, that the government that they had created would become oppressive, would seize power over a period of time unto itself, would make itself the arbitrator of what power it has and what power it doesn't have. That the Supreme Court would probably be sitting up there deciding for itself what it gets to rule on and what it doesn't get to rule on. That it is the sole arbiter of what the Constitution of the United States says. That it can rewrite the Constitution at whim. That an executive branch would become so administratively cumbersome that you would have little bald-headed guys in classes sitting in interior rooms with no windows making laws that impact your daily life and without any oversight by your elected officials. That the legislative branch would become so impotent to exercise its own power, or so corrupt in its own power, that it no longer represented the will of the people. And so they put in place Article 5 of the Constitution. And that article quite simply says that there's two ways to pass an amendment to the Constitution. One is the Congress can propose an amendment. It would go through the House and the Senate, and then it would hit the states as a proposed amendment. That proposed amendment would not go through the president for veto or upholding or signature. The president would have nothing to say about it. The legislature would send the proposed amendment out to the states, and if three-fourths of the states said yes, it would become an amendment to the Constitution. That's the only way we've amended the Constitution to date. But George Mason, in his wisdom, stood up on the next to the last day of the Constitutional Convention and said, I don't like that the legislature is the only way to get an amendment through, because someday they are going to become so oppressive that the people will no longer have a method of amending their own constitution. And so after some debate, they added another clause to Amendment 5, to Article 5, and that was that the Constitution can also be amended when two-thirds of the states demand it from Washington. When two-thirds of the states sign on and say, we want a convention for the purpose of proposing amendments to the Constitution of the United States, that has to happen. There was some debate, some serious debate during that as to whether when the states, when two-thirds of the states asked for this to happen, Congress shouldn't have a say on whether it should happen or not. And the ruling was no. When two-thirds of the states say they want this thing must happen. And then when two-thirds of the states say they want a convention, the 50 states would get together in convention. They would send delegates. They would discuss. They would propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States, be it one, be it 100. It doesn't matter. The amendments would be sent out to the states for ratification, and it would take 3/4 of the states to ratify an amendment. So it's going to take 38 states, 38 of the 50 states, to ratify any amendment. And how is that going to help you? Well, I can make some suggestions. I mean, I can make some suggestions about what some of the 100 amendments that come out of this thing ought to be. And bring them on. Bring them on. Bring on the amendments. You know, if you've got something that you can get 38 states to agree to, then we'd ought to have it. I don't care what it is. I'm not particularly worried that we're going to get anything too far right or too far left out of this thing. 38 states have to sign on. I'd like to see term limits. Now, I'm going to tell you, I am a recent convert to term limits. I'm a libertarian, so I was always of the impression that term limits is just a way to tell me that I can't vote for somebody that I want to vote for. In other words, if I get a good guy up there, I little need the Constitution of the United States telling me that there comes a time when I can't vote for this guy. But I've become a convert. I am absolutely on the side of term limits. And I'm on the side of term limits not just for representatives and senators. I'm on the side of term limits for Supreme Court justices, for federal justices, for federal judges of all kilt. And I'm not talking at the end of some time they have to be reappointed. I'm talking term limits. I'm talking X number of years and you're done. And not only should there be some term limits, but there should be some restrictions on what these termed out senators and representatives can do when they get out of Congress. They should not be allowed to participate in any business that does business with the federal government. They should not be able to do any business with the federal government. They should not be able to lobby the federal government. They should be in no position to receive favor from the federal government. But right along with term limits, I think it's damned near time that we have a recall procedure for these clowns in Washington, D.C. We have no procedure in place in either the United States Constitution or in the Constitution of this state to recall Roy Blunt and Claire McCaskill, two senators who go to Washington, D.C. and thumb their nose at us every damn day. Every day. Missouri is opposed to Obamacare 70-30. Clearly, in votes at the polling places, in polls, 70-30 opposed to Obamacare, have been since before it was a thing and continue to be. And Claire McCaskill and Roy Blunt are in favor of Obamacare, so you've got Obamacare. How is it that these people don't work for us anymore? How is it that these people get to go to Washington and without fear of any consequence do things against the will of 70% of their constituents? How does that happen and there be no repercussions? There be no method for getting for firing these people. I'd have a recall for the president of the United States. I'd make 3/4 of the states required to put the president's name back on a ballot, a kind of no confidence vote. They call it in parliamentary countries. But 3/4 of the states ought to be able to say, okay, Mr. President, you're not quite what we bargained for. So we're going to take you back to the people and see if they want to keep you or not. If 3/4 of the states did that, he wouldn't survive. I'm betting a dollar that if you had that rule today, you could get 37 states on board. I mean, this guy is lawless. Next week, we're going to talk about one of my favorites. We're going to spend the entire time next week with Lloyd Sloan. He's going to come along, and we're going to talk about the state repeal amendment. Now, I'm going to kind of foreshadow this a little bit. The state repeal amendment basically says that the states, in some number, and I'm not going to steal all Lloyd's thunder, can say no to any federal law. You talk about states' rights. I mean, that's what the Constitution was all about when it was written. Right there. The federal government works for the state governments. Not the other way around. We don't serve the federal government. It serves us. We have a dictator sitting in the White House today who is of the opinion that we serve him. That the states serve Washington. That the legislature serves the president. And there's nothing that we can do about that until next election time. Until we get an Article 5 convention and fix that problem. You know, I love the Constitution. I love it. It's a beautiful, beautiful document. But that doesn't mean that once in a while it doesn't need some changes. I mean, we've done it. We've already done it. We've already made some very necessary changes to it. It's time to make the changes necessary to seize back the power to the people. And repealing the 17th Amendment is one of those changes. Now, the 17th Amendment, if you remember a short discussion we had last week, is the one that said senators are elected by you. Yeah. It surprises a lot of people to find out that it hasn't always been that way, that people didn't always get to vote on their senator. See, when the thing was first set up, it was set up kind of on the pattern of the House of Lords and House of Commons in the parliamentary countries. There was this representative body, the House of Representatives, which was a direct representation of the people. One representative for X number of people. So X number of people had one voice they voted for directly in Washington, D.C. And that person was there to represent that X number of people. He didn't care about what was best for another group of people. He didn't care what was best for the entire community. He was there to represent this group of people. And so, if that had carried through to till today, there would be 400 or something groups of people. And before a bill could pass the House of Representatives, it would have to be in the best interest of half of all of those groups of people. Now, what happens, though, is that when the people are directly represented like that, there is an ebb and flow. You get passions of the people that the people are affected by unemployment. The people are affected by the stock market. The people are affected by things that they feel are out of their control. And so you do naturally get this flow of passion within the people. And it's very likely that sometime the representatives, the direct representatives of the people, would do something that not only is not in the best interest of, but is in violation of the rights of the other half of the people. So you got this more deliberative body. You got the Senate. And the Senate was designed to be smaller, to have more statesmanlike discourse. It only has two representatives from each state, and those representatives were elected by the legislatures of the states that they came from. So Jefferson City would elect our two senators in body, in the House of Representatives and the Senate, in Jefferson City. They would, in joint session, elect the two senators from the state of Missouri. Those two senators would work for the legislature of the state of Missouri. Now, you can imagine right now that there would be no Obamacare if that happened. When 70% of the people in the state of Missouri say no, and when congressmen and senators in Jefferson City pick up the phone and call Roy Blunt and say no, and call Claire McCaskill and say the answer is no, they're going to listen. They're talking directly to the people that vote for them. The few people in Jefferson City who they are there to represent, those people elected by the people of the state of Missouri. The idea also with that was that rather than just going back and forth with the passions of the people, someone is in Washington, D.C. to look out for the best interest of the entity that calls itself the state of Missouri. On that concept alone, many, many laws in Washington, D.C. would not pass. Many, many laws in Washington, made in Washington, D.C. are against the best interest of the majority of the states as separate entities, as entities that feel themselves sovereign of entities that should still feel that the federal government works for them, not the other way around. And so, along came a progressive president and a progressive Senate and a progressive House of Representatives. And progressive in that day was very, very progressive, but not anything like it is today. And along with the New Deal, and along with social welfare, and along with all kinds of expanded cabinet rights and responsibilities, they gave you the 17th Amendment to the United States Constitution that said, this thing with the Senate, it's too heavy into states' rights. We need to get that back so that we can control the states instead of them controlling us. They gave you the 17th Amendment, and today states feel impotent to do anything to stand up for their sovereignty and their rights, to stand up for the fact that, as the Constitution stands today, the federal government still works for the people and not the other way around. The federal government still serves us and not the other way around. Now, that's according to the Constitution. That certainly is not according to those leaders in Washington, D.C. How do we get this thing rolling? We'll talk about that when we come back in just a minute. If you drive a car, pack the street. If you drive to six, I'll pack your seat. If you get too cold, I'll pack the heat. If you take a walk, I'll pack your food. No sense calling it anything else. I mean, it is a tax, so and it's a fairly regressive tax. An awful lot of people in Iowa and in Oregon and Washington and Utah and places where we are, they're very poor people. They're going to pay a lot more money for electricity.
If you make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime.
Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the Fair Tax on the Fair Tax Show. That's Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We explode the myths. We tell the truth. We get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835. Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. Good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
We've come to that part of the show where we really, really need your input. We really need a discourse on where we go from here. 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I don't see any method at all.
Okay, we're back. Listen, we want to thank, as always, Missouri Grassroots Coalition for sponsoring this radio time. This Blog Talk Radio time. We're here almost every night, not me. Tomorrow night, Cynthia Davis will be here. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Cynthia Davis at Homefront. Don't miss that. Wednesday nights, Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante, comes along. Always entertaining. I've been making promises, and I'm still negotiating for a powerhouse voice to fill that Thursday night slot. Saturday nights, I come back with the Fair Tax Show. We've had some great shows. We do some interesting exercises. The Fair Tax Show is a show that you need to be paying attention to. And the reason is because you come away from that show with the exercises necessary to go out and actually show people exactly what the fair tax does for the working poor mother. That's what we worked on last week. We actually went through a mathematical series of what happens when she gets all of her paycheck, when she buys retail goods that are no longer taxed federally as they're being produced, and then she pays 23% tax on those goods as she buys them, exempt up to $86 a week, and how she ends up with an additional $5,000+ in her pocket. We did the math. We showed how it works. We showed how it works with every like scenario, with every like thing. And you need to come away from these Saturday night shows with that kind of ammunition to go out and fight these sound bites and these crazy hypocrite people who call themselves conservative that really are just in favor of continuing to tax income, that are consistently in favor of continuing to tax wealth for the sake of taxing wealth, that are continually, and some liberals who don't believe that this is a fair tax. You can show, you can leave one of these shows, you can go out and you can actually show people with a pencil and paper how this tax is fair. It hurts no one. It helps everyone. And it is the single biggest step to giving power back to the people. The second single biggest step is Article 5 of the United States Constitution. And one of the primary articles, amendments that we need to make is the States' Rights Amendment. Next week, I'll be with Lloyd Smith. Lloyd Lloyd Sloan, who is championing, he's out running around the country now championing the state repeal amendment, Madison's lost amendment. He has got the knowledge on this thing. He's made some tweaks to what Madison wanted to make it work better. He'll be on the podium, I assure you, when we get this convention going, trying to sell, and with a good number of people supporting him, trying to sell the state repeal amendment as one of the ones that ought to be sent out to the state. So we'll talk about that next week at length. Okay, so what do we do? What do we do? Well, you have to start. You have to start by spending a Saturday, whatever your Saturday is. If you work Saturday through Thursday, then your Saturday is Friday or something like that. You need to spend a Saturday writing the state legislature. And don't just write to your representative and your senator. And we're talking your rep and senator in Jefferson City now. You need to go online to house.mo.gov and senate.mo.gov, and you need to click on everyone's name, and you need to send them this. You can cut and paste, send the same email. We, the people of the state of Missouri, want you to demand an Article 5 convention to propose amendments to the Constitution. That's all you need to say. All they need to get is 20,000 emails saying that. Every legislator in Jefferson City needs to get 20,000 emails saying that. So you people listening, do it whatever your Saturday is this week. Don't expect answers back from the ones who you are not constituent to. But let them know that there are 20,000 minimum, 20,000 people in the state of Missouri who want this thing done. Then as you're going around, I mean, talk to people about Article 5. Talk to people about how we need to get our... When someone at work starts complaining about something the government's doing, say, hey, you know, we can do something about that. We can fix that. We don't have to wait for an election. We don't have to choose, we no longer have to choose between the best of two evils on election day. We can fix it ourselves right now. The Constitution belongs to us. Here's what Article 5 says. Now, you sit down and you spend a Saturday writing to your representatives and saying, we demand that you send to Washington, D.C. and say, Missouri wants an Article 5 amendment convention. If every one of you can get one person, now we've got 40,000. How many do you suppose it'll take? I mean, can you imagine that if every legislator in Jefferson City got 40,000 emails demanding that they call Washington, D.C. for an Article 5 amendment convention, that they wouldn't do so? It's that simple. It really is. It's that simple. 20,000 emails to every senator and legislator in Jefferson City. That's everyone listening here tonight. If each of you can only bring on one more person, that's 40,000. And that would do it. That would do it. I mean, why are you here tonight? Hell, it's Monday night. There's pretty good TV on. There's football on. Why are you here if you're not going to get up now and go do something about this? So do it. You don't need to suggest what amendments you want. That can come out of the convention. All you need to do is say, I'm fed up, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Here's your job, Mr. Representative. Here's your job, Mr. Senator. You tell Washington, D.C. that Missouri wants an Article 5 Amendment Convention, and we want it now. Now, don't kid yourself. That's only the beginning. don't think we don't have a lot of work ahead of us. We need two-thirds of the states to do that before we get a convention that proposes amendments that we need three-fourths of the states to ratify. Now, it's good. It's good for us that it is this difficult. Because if it weren't, then all of that mamby-pamby crying you hear from the people on the right about how this thing could get derailed and get out of hand, some of that would have merit if it weren't this difficult. But because it's this difficult, it has no merit. All of that crying has no merit. If we pass the first hurdle of getting us off the damned couch and to send 40,000 letters to every senator and representative in Missouri, a major hurdle, and then we pass the second major hurdle of getting that out of two-thirds of the states, then any amendments proposed at the convention have to get through the biggest hurdle of a ratification by three-fourths of the states. Now, I'm betting good money that this is a significant time in history, that this is a time in history where the amendments that you could get through three-fourths of the states will have to do with states' rights, will have to do with state sovereignty, will have to do with the relationship between the states and the federal government that serves the states. That amendments that get through three-fourths of the states will have to do with the size and scope of the federal government. That the amendments that could be ratified right now, at this point in time, by three-fourths of all of the states would have to do with the overpowerful and self-important Supreme Court, would have to do with the arrogant legislators who go to Washington, D.C. only to pad their pockets at your expense. I'll bet you a dollar you're not going to get through three-fourths of the states anything that has anything to do with gay marriage one way or the other. I'll bet you my bottom dollar that you're not going to get through three-fourths of the states with anything that has anything to do with abortion one way or the other. All of that right-left crap, all of the stuff that soils conventions and soils campaigns and soils politics in general, it's not going to get through three-fourths of the states. It probably isn't going to get through a majority at the convention to even be proposed as an amendment in any way, shape, or form. But it certainly is not going to get through three-fourths of the states as a ratified amendment. But I'll bet you that you can get through three-fourths of the states, the things we've discussed tonight. It's time. The states are feeling oppressed. The people of the states, you and me, we are feeling oppressed. It's time for a peaceful revolution. It's time for us to say, this is our country, and we're taking it back. It never belonged to you. It doesn't belong to you now. And we're going to see to it that you know it isn't yours. Are you going to do it? Are you going to get up on Saturday morning and spend just one Saturday of your life trying to save the country for your children, for your grandchildren? Are you going to do what the founding fathers intended for you to do when they wrote this Constitution? Are you going to do what the American revolutionaries spilled blood for? Are you going to help us make history by calling for an Article 5 convention to propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States?
The
emergency disruption
system is now activated. 347-677-1835.
We're still here.
5% appear too small.
$250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime.
It specifically said that it is not constitutional under the Commerce Clause. They said it is constitutional under the tax. And as to the question about raising taxes for the middle class, if I may, sir, let's just look at the record. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that in 2016, 4 million Americans will pay the mandate penalty or tax. 75% of those people will make less than $120,000 a year.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making better investments.
There it is right there. There it is right there. This is a mouthpiece for the President of the United States of America, suggesting that all we have to do to get it right is break through this notion that your kids belong to you. For too long, we've held this notion that your kids don't belong to all of us and that we can do with your kids as we please. That is a mouthpiece for the government that's running your country. What are you going to do about it? Secret Santa is the only thing that Missouri Grassroots Coalition ever, ever collects money for. We go out on Christmas Eve. And we help as many people as we can. Quite frankly, we are behind the power curve this year. We're not doing as well, in spite of the recovery, as we did last year. And we'd like to be ahead of that. We had a goal of doubling what we did last year. And we start collecting for this Secret Santa in February of every year. Because we know, and you know, looking ahead, how hard it is for you to give and for us to beg you to give in November and December when all of everything else is hitting you hard. So we ask that throughout the year, you send us a couple of bucks. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button, and use PayPal to send us a little bit for Secret Santa. Every penny of the Secret Santa Fund goes to buy presents for children. There's no overhead. There's no advertising. There's no salaries at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. There's no gas payments. There's no stipends. Every penny that's sent into the Secret Santa Fund, and a little bit more just to make sure we spend every penny, is spent on presents on Christmas morning for needy children. It's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. The Secret Santa button is in the top. Click on it. Use PayPal right there on the page. Send us a couple of bucks. I'm going to sign off for now. We've had a low participation tonight. That's my fault. I got busy today and I didn't send out the promos that I usually send out of the upcoming show. So I'm going to guess that our more vocals are not here tonight. We'll look for them again next week. We need to get this discussion rolling. We need to get this discourse moving. We need to get things going on this. The listeners are still there. I can see them. So get out and get it done. Rise to the challenge, and let's make the Constitution work for us. I'm Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. You've been listening to the Hour of Truth on Monday night. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.